The civil war in Syria continues to drag on year after year, battle after battle, with a constantly rising body count. It's in the news all the time with depressing images of the war itself and the many, many people fleeing from it. Our first guest today could not turn away from the images of the refugees. In fact, she created some of her own, both as photographer and as worker at a refugee camp in Greece, harboring Syrian refugees. Taylor Olson-Hill is a Rogue Valley native and Oregon State University graduate who's traveled on several humanitarian missions in the past. She speaks on the Southern Oregon University campus this afternoon, 4 o'clock at the Hannon Library. She's here in the studio now. Taylor, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
This was not your first trip to give humanitarian aid, as it turns out. Tell us how you got started down this line of work.
I got started my freshman year of college. I started traveling in Cambodia. I was presented with an opportunity to go for the summer and help build a school and teach some English. And that was my first experience really traveling anywhere. And it really got me thinking about the world around me and thinking internationally and globally. And from there, I just started going. I couldn't stop. And I went to Haiti next to work on a clean water project. And when I started watching the Syrian refugee crisis happen, I realized this was something I needed to do. I needed to respond. And I went to Greece and ended up working in a camp for unaccompanied minors.
So in your experiences then, I mean, you get a chance to see life as it is, unlike what we live here in the United States. I mean, what has that done in terms of broadening your horizons, opening your eyes, any of the above?
It's completely changed my worldview and how I see things, even from how I decide to spend my own water resources, you know, taking shorter showers or the way I do the dishes. It really makes me think about conserving things that other people don't have the option to. They have to decide, do I take a shower or do I have drinking water for the week? And it really changes the way you see the world around you, especially in a country like ours. And then after coming home from Greece and working in a camp where the children couldn't leave, they had to stay in the camp for the most part, having the choice to do things like go home or stay home, have this meal or that meal, little choices become so important, and you don't realize that until you don't have that choice.
When you see people who don't have those choices at all. So is there much psychic prep, I wonder, before you go to a place like a refugee camp to muster the courage for what you might see and experience?
Yes, you really need to. I think having traveled before really helped. If I had not traveled and this was my first experience doing something like this, I think it would have affected me much, much more than it did affect me, because it still affected me a lot. But you're surrounded by people who have gone through such traumatic things, because we not only had Syrian children, but we had children from Afghanistan who had been attacked and fled from the Taliban. We had children from Pakistan, some who also were fleeing from the Taliban, and Somalia. So we had just large amounts of trauma that they experienced there. The trauma of having to flee their country to get to Greece, which is a very hard journey, and trauma they experienced in Greece, because there was a lot of local opposition to the refugees, a lot of local hostility. And the camp they were in is kind of famous. The Pope was there early on when I was there, called the Moria Detention Center. We call it the detention center because it really is more like a jail than a camp.
Because you can't leave.
And there are a lot of human rights abuses that go on there, particularly vulnerable children like unaccompanied minors who don't have adults who might be there to look out for them. It was found that there were lots of cases of physical, emotional, sexual abuse going on. So I can't imagine them having to have come from places like Syria only to get here where they think they're going to be safe and then have further trauma to endure.
Taylor Olson-Hill is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. She's a Rogue Valley native, Oregon State University graduate, and world traveler. She's been, as you heard, in a couple of different places in the world to help people who could stand a little support and attention and comfort, usually on their way to other places. In this case, she was in Lesvos, Greece, helping refugees from Syria, Afghanistan, Pakistan, and Somalia, among other places. You can join us on The Exchange as we talk about Taylor's story and the people she got to see and help. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. So is Lesbos just an obvious place for people to land because it is sort of the gateway between where they're coming from and Europe?
It is. I didn't know this really until I got there, how close it is to Turkey. Mm-hmm. It's about 4 miles from the coast of Turkey. And when you're standing on the beach, because we'd have patrols to watch for arrivals, you can see Turkey clearly across the way. So many refugees would hire smugglers and they would set them up in dinghies, usually fully overloaded, which is where we would get the mass drownings. And they would set them off, kind of push them, but then they were on their own. They didn't have paddles. They didn't have anything. So it was up to the current to sort of get them to the shore. And sometimes that would happen. Sometimes it wouldn't. But I think because it was so close, they just decided that because of the political situation in Turkey and that their attitude towards refugees, that Greece would be a safer option for them to continue on through other parts of Europe.
Is Turkey tougher on refugees than Greece is?
We've heard stories. I haven't been to Turkey, but other volunteers who have said that there's a lot of abuse towards them, too. The police don't treat them kindly. Many children end up working in illegal child labor situations because they're the only ones that can support their family because Turkey doesn't allow them to work, which is really unfortunate because so many of them are doctors and teachers and engineers, and they have so much to contribute to society, and they can't do anything, and that's really frustrating for them.
Were you on the beach when some boats arrived?
I was not. I was working primarily in the camp because I arrived about a week after the deal went through with the EU and Turkey, mm-hmm. so it almost stopped all arrivals for a while. Mm-hmm. I was on a patrol where we would watch, but I wasn't there for any arrivals. I was working at that point mostly in the camp.
And so what were your duties in the camp? What kinds of things did you do?
I was working with Save the Children at that point, along with Starfish. And we did activities with the children to kind of keep their minds occupied. We played a lot of sports, which was fun. We taught them how to play basketball. They taught us how to play cricket, which uh-huh. is cool because I've never done that. We did art therapy, which was amazing with some of the boys because they most incredible artists, some of them.
Really?
Some of them have their art in galleries now, which I think is amazing because it really shows their journey and their heartbreaking. We did activities. We taught them English. A lot of them expressed the desire to continue school. One of the boys from Afghanistan told me a story about how he had to stop school because the Taliban had come and burned down his school. And that made him really sad because it was so important for him to go to school. So we tried to set up a school within the camp for the boys. And talking to them a lot was something that I think was helpful for them. Just to be able to share their stories with somebody, mm-hmm. I think was very therapeutic.
Did they have rudimentary English, most of them?
A lot of them did. Some of them didn't speak any English at first, but by the time, after a few months, they spoke
so good English. Were you able to pick up any of the languages they were speaking, Arabic or Dari or anything else?
We did. They tried to teach us a little bit of Arabic and Dari. It was fun.
So what are the prospects for the people that you saw on Lesbos? I mean, did any of them actually leave and begin to trek on to other places while you were there?
Yes. Some of the boys were placed. The process for them going was to go from the camp into a safe house for the children, and that was more of a permanent residence when they could apply for asylum. And so some of them were then able to go on, and the boys that I'm in contact with still some of them have said they've made it to the mainland in Greece. Some of them have said they're on now to countries like Denmark and Italy. So they are moving along in the process.
Taylor Olson-Hill worked overseas at a refugee camp in Lesbos, Greece, helping refugees from Syria, and several other countries as well try to find places in the new world, fleeing the problems in their own countries. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange as we talk about her experiences, and maybe you have some of your own that you can share if you've done this sort of work yourself. If you have questions for her, those are fine too. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. When you're in a situation like that, though, where people are, they've gathered there for reasons really they don't want to be there. They're there because it's better than being where they were, which is potentially life-ending. Give me your own sense of what you can and can't do. I mean, what is within your power to do for them, and what is not.
Yeah, it's I think a little bit harder when you're working with children because of privacy and protection. You can't just take them to go do things without permission. You can't always bring things to them without permission. And so I wanted to tell their stories to try and get support sent, but it wasn't always possible through the organizations we were working with. But we did do little things. We tried to get them foods that were similar to foods they would have had at home. So we brought in a lot of spices. The volunteers that I worked with, we'd go and buy spices because the meals that they had were standard, but they weren't amazing. They weren't great meals, and it was usually the same thing every single day. So even providing little spices that would remind them of home was something that really helped them.
Wow, that's a really small detail, but makes a big difference, it sounds like.
It did make a big difference. The morale the first day, I mean, we brought in, I think, 4 bags of pepper, and it was gone within 20 minutes. They were so excited to just have something like that.
That's amazing. How old were most of the kids you dealt with?
The kids were about 14 to 17, most of them, and there were a few that were a little younger. But mm-hmm.
Okay, so pretty sharp. We're talking teenagers who are getting close to adulthood here.
Yes.
How profound were some of the stories you were able to hear from them?
They were incredibly profound, and some of them were able to express them fully through English, but some of them were as simple as, I was home, boom, mother, father, gone. And hearing that is just, how do you react to that? That's just, I can't imagine what that was, to be sitting at home 1 minute and a bomb goes off and your family's gone and you had to see that and you're a young boy.
And were a lot of them in that circumstance where they were traveling alone?
A lot of them were. All of these boys were unaccompanied, mm-hmm. so they were traveling alone, whether they lost family on the way or their family was still in Turkey or back in their homes. It kind of varied depending on the country they came from and their situation, but I can't imagine having to go on that journey alone.
How long were you in Lesbos?
I was there about 3 months.
Mm-hmm. And then, what are the prospects for the people that you saw there? I mean, have they moved on by now? Are some of them still there?
Some of them are still there, and some of them have been able to move on. Some of them have been relocated into other countries in Europe. Some of them are trying to go through the family reunification process because they do have older siblings or uncles that are in places like Germany or Austria, and so they're trying to reconnect with them.
You mentioned earlier about keeping in touch with some of the boys, so you're still in contact with them?
Yes, some of them I'm still in contact with.
Through what? Electronically?
Electronically, which is the nice thing about that is that most of them do have a phone or something they can use to keep in contact, so they will give me updates on their situation, which is really comforting mm-hmm. to know that they're okay.
So are the majority of them still there, or have the majority moved on, would you say?
The majority of the boys that I worked with in the camp are now in Athens, mm-hmm. and they've been placed in safe houses, so they can, and most of them have applied for asylum.
What do you make of the many countries, including our own, where there is resistance in varying degrees to taking in refugees?
I think it's really sad. And I think a lot of it is from fear, because people don't understand, whether it's because they've only seen certain things in the media or because they've never met somebody from this country or from this religion. It's different. They don't know it. And so they feel uncomfortable. And that's why I'm excited to give this presentation, because I'm hoping that maybe it'll make it more human, the issue will be a little more connectable and people might not be quite as afraid.
You mentioned working for Save the Children, and I notice Starfish is the other organization in here. Tell us a bit about Starfish.
Starfish was a local organization started by a woman who's been living on Lesbos basically her entire life. She owned a restaurant, her and her husband, right in the harbor of the village that I lived in, and she just started seeing when the outpour started coming to Greece, the Coast Guard would bring them into the harbor, which is right where her restaurant was, and she realized we can do something, whether it's giving them clothes or feeding them, we can do something. And so she realized this isn't going to stop anytime soon. This is going to be really big. So she and a few other locals got together and started this amazing organization to help from just the ground up, basically.
Is your talk today just kind of laying out your story? Or are you trying to get other people interested in doing perhaps the things that you've done with refugees?
Yes, I would love to get people interested in doing this sort of work. And it is hard work, but it's rewarding and it will, I think, change you for the better. And I'm hoping to kind of dispel myths surrounding refugees or any fears that people might have and really get people to understand the situation and that these people are just people that need help. And
just about to go here, Taylor. If people want to help out, what can they do?
Whether they want to make donations to places like Starfish or Save the Children or find organizations in local places like Greece or there's many other places in Europe where you can go and just volunteer, I think is the best way.
All right. So Taylor Olson-Hill worked in Lesbos, Greece for 3 months. She'll be talking at the Hannon Library at Southern Oregon University today at 4 o'clock. Thanks so much for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you.